Time for a deep dive into the one issue that matters most in a capitalist democracy, money. This is Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, a joint production of the Maggie Dawn Show and the Patriotic Millionaires. Now, let's start talking money.
Hello, everybody. How y'all doing? Happy Indigenous Peoples Day. Welcome to another episode of Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm very excited to be joined today by Sarah Chase, an author and journalist who's done everything from reporting for National Public Radio in Paris to covering the fall and resurgence of the Taliban in Afghanistan. She's served also as a special advisor to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and was a senior associate in the Democracy and Rule of Law program at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Sarah is, in a word, an expert on corruption, what it looks like in the modern world, how it's captured in our institutions, and what all of this means for the future. She literally wrote the book on it. It's called On Corruption in America, what is at stake. And that's what we're going to be talking about today, corruption in America, how it's happening, and what that means for you. You ever thought, I hear all these people talking about corruption, but what does that really mean for me? We're going to be talking about it today. Sarah, thank you so much for making time for us here on Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. You've had a long career studying corruption in developing and war-torn countries like Afghanistan. Can we really compare what has happened in those countries to what is going on in America today?
Shockingly, Maggie, yes. Thanks for having me on your show. I'm not one of the millionaires. Invited
Nor am
by,
I, my right? friend. Nor am I, my friend.
So I set out, having worked for years in developing countries, Afghanistan, Nigeria, you know, Central Asia, you name it, Nepal. I sensed that the phenomena that I was seeing in countries like that, which do fall into a rough pattern, that pattern was likely to be discernible in the United States. Maggie, I had no idea to what extent. I had no idea how perfectly we map onto the patterns that I was seeing in countries like that. And let me just try to lay out as briefly as I can what I'm talking about. The problem with how we are led to think about corruption most of the time is it's coming to us from either the press or from court cases. And both of those platforms, if you will, they need to have like a beginning, a middle, and an end. You know what I mean? Like there has to be a bad guy who's doing, or him or her and their collection of buddies, who's doing a bad thing, which is kind of has a start and a stop in time. And so that gives us the feeling that these are these one-off events that happen over here, and they happen in Chicago, and they happen in Florida, and it's all scattered. That's not how corruption works. And that's why that way of understanding it is so, I want to say it's deceptive, and it also just makes us turn off, right? Like, oh God, another stupid story. You know, what I found in all of these countries, and first, as you mentioned, in Afghanistan, where I lived and worked for a decade, is that corruption is in fact the kind of corruption we have to care about, and the kind of corruption that has taken hold in the United States is the operating system of a sophisticated network or networks. And these networks cross, you know, the boundaries between sectors that we love to keep separate in our minds, right? Like private sector and public sector, right? So our idea is like these are two separate sectors. The genius of kleptocratic or corrupt networks is they've got members in both sides. And in fact, they're often, you know, passing these members around. So they have jobs in business for a while, and then they hold jobs in government, or sometimes both at the same time. And sometimes you've got the out and out criminals, the genuine, you know, drug dealers, weapons traffickers, human traffickers, and stuff like that are wired, violent gangs are wired into these networks. And that is the case as it exists in the United States. And we can talk about details. The details will shift from country to country, depending on what the main sources of revenue streams are. The United States does not have a gigantic source of foreign assistance coming into us, right? So that's not one of the revenue streams that is captured the way it might be in Afghanistan or in, you know, a developing country, Honduras, Guatemala, where I've also worked. What I will say, just to wrap up, is the private sector strands of these networks in every single country that I have studied include finance, defense, high-end real estate, and energy.
Yeah, finance, because you need the banks to launder the money and to facilitate the payments. Real estate, because it's very easy to hide money in incredibly expensive real estate. Energy, because it is needed everywhere. And defense, because every country spends a ton of money on it. And it's this very interwoven intersection of public and private actors within especially these sorts of industries that facilitate this. And it's not, you know, I think one of the things that people mistake is that there needs to be outright law violations, but that's not actually necessary for corruption to take hold, is it?
And here's why. Here's why. Because what do the corrupt do once they're networked? The first thing they start doing is changing the laws to legalize what they're doing. Right. And so that's where you get this huge disconnect between the ordinary population, which can smell corruption a mile away. And I'm not trying to say that everything is corruption. We do have to be a little bit careful. Yes. But this kind of insider capture of political and economic power, that's really what we're getting at here. And the public gets it. The public can see it in every single country I've been to. Again, I mean, but I remember in Uzbekistan, someone telling me, the thing is, in Egypt. The genius is they legalize it. And I thought, that's what's happening in the United States.
It's exactly what's happening in the United States. Of course, the Supreme Court declaring that if you bribe a government official, but you just pay him afterwards and you act like it's a tip, maybe not so corrupt. That's corrupt. We know that. The Supreme Court declaring presidents are kings for their official actions. It is opening the door to corruption, something that the minority of justices tried to explicitly point out.
Let me stop you right there. On those two particular ones that you mentioned, the minority was on the right side. But in a whole string of cases leading up to that most recent corruption case, they were all unanimous.
Yeah.
So that's something else we have to be super careful of, is that in fact, up at the top, in both Congress and the Supreme Court, unfortunately, the political divide is not as sharp as it is on cultural issues.
Yes. Well, one of the reasons for that, just from my perspective, Sarah, and I'll gut check it with you, is that judges and justices are what I'm going to call late stage actors. They're getting this after the thing has occurred. They often have only a limited view of facts. They're not seeing all of these cross-sectional interactions. So it's an imperfect solution to look to the legal system for resolve in these matters, though it needs to be part of what is the response. What I wanted to ask you is
can I come in on that one, Maggie?
Of course.
So I think that's brilliant. And I think you're right. And I think there's another piece of this, which is, you know, justices, let's just look at the Supreme Court. So many justices have been involved in the very kinds of taking material benefits in return for access, et cetera. The fact is, this is not, again, it's the judges and even, or justices and even members of Congress, they are judge and party at the same time. We're asking them to make laws and apply laws whose only defendants can be themselves. Ordinary people who don't hold public office are not subject to ethics and corruption laws. And so that's also a systemic issue here.
Yeah, the self-interest, right? It's quite the quandary, right? Do I want to legislate myself and put lots of restrictions in place? Perhaps not.
Right? They're members of these networks. These are the people who are members of the networks, and the networks, among the other sectors that they cross the political divide. And the only hope we have to combat them is if we, the people, can manage to join forces across the political divide. And at the moment, we are at each other's throats, which is exactly where the, you know, nasty millionaires, not the patriotic ones, where they want us.
Yes, because when divided, corruption is given an even larger entree to really take hold, because we're distracted about some potentially very off the point sort of issues, though always important. Folks, my very special guest is Sarah Chase, a world traveled and studied journalist. She's literally written the book on corruption. It's called On Corruption American, What is at Stake? If you do not think corruption impacts you and your life, I'm going to ask Sarah that exact question after these brief messages, and how corruption fundamentally underlies and attacks the very building blocks of our democracy. It matters to you and to your family. We're going to come back with more after these brief messages. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Patriotic millionaires also purchase advertising time on various civic media stations throughout Wisconsin.